This is Forrest Solis interviewing Marie Buck Hutchison.
Cherie.
Good God.
But you got Hutchison right.
That's where all my attention was focused. Cherie Buck Hutchison for Creative Push Project on September 19th at 1:30. So are we recording?
Mm-hmm.
Good. So Ashley's just going to check levels.
Okay.
And while she's doing that, I'll talk a little bit about the process. So that you're probably a good distance, maybe to be a little closer. You may want to scoot your chair in. And when you're speaking to try to, you know, direct your comments towards me or the microphone, but not move your head while you're saying things, you know, the voice will go in and out, which you're a pro at this. So I will be asking questions, but they'll all get edited out. So if you could kind of
pause a minute.
No, bring the question into your response.
Oh, okay,
that'd
yeah.
be great. So if I say, you know, did you gain a lot of weight during that pregnancy? Instead of saying yes,
say,
it's like unusable. You know,
I gained a lot of weight during pregnancy.
That, or I didn't, or whatever. You
instead
know?
Of yes and no answers.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. And because a lot of the editing is going to happen, just, you know, find comfort in the pauses. You can collect your thoughts. You know, anything like that. If you remember something, but it's out of order, that's fine. You can say, oh, I remember this, and, you know, we'll just put it back in order. Let's see. Paint a picture, describe events visually or sensory. You know, think about sounds or smells or, you know, anything, feelings, just to really transport the artist and transport the listener, you know, into the space.
And the focus is more labor and delivery versus pregnancy.
Yeah, but we're going back as far as the conception to the pregnancy. So we know like to know how the pregnancy went. You know what I mean? So what your experience was with the pregnancy. So that's been a part of it.
It did affect the delivery location.
Right, yeah. So please, see why. We're going to talk about that. And I think that's it. Ashley's going to be taking notes, but they're just for editing purposes, so just, you know, ignore it. Any questions?
My only question is that I have four, plus I have a grandma that was a midwife, and so there's this wisdom that was passed through. So I don't know that you're going to have enough time today, and so I don't know if you want to just have me summarize each four real quick and have you choose which
you
want to prioritize?
Or should just
go chronological?
We need to cover all four births if you if there's one or two that really stands out in your mind. You know, but if not, we can definitely do all four from beginning to end, you know.
Well, I don't think you're gonna have time.
No, but we can reschedule that.
Oh, okay.
Sometimes, yeah. I mean, if you know off the top of your head which births you like.
I think there were two that stood out more, I would say, than...
Okay.
Just in terms of uniqueness and variety for your goals.
Right. That sounds great.
Okay.
That sounds great, as long as you're comfortable with that. And again, this is a long project. It's over the length of a year, so we can record the other stories, too, at a later date, you know? So it's not a rush or anything.
Yeah, well, I just don't know what you have... And
no,
what you want your composite to look like.
I just
want
to be sensitive, too. Because sometimes, you know, like, my mother felt bad because she didn't say as much about my brother's birth as she said about... You know what I mean? So I want to be sensitive
care.
To those kinds of things,
right.
too. You
if they do, mean? They're going to have to get over it.
All right. Excellent. We're on the same page. Okay. So, well, just to make sure that the audio is set up, why don't you just tell us a little bit about yourself?
Okay. I'm Cherie Buck Hutchison. I'm an artist in North Phoenix. Let's see. I went to Third Friday last night. Are we good? Okay.
So we're going to be talking about two births, right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe take us back to try to keep them separate. I know it's hard to not compare a lot. But if you can take us back as far back with the first one as you can remember. So, you know, was it planned?
So my first child was not planned. I think we'd been married about 2 years is all. And it was in the 70s, so the hippie thing was still going on. The, you know, Studio 54 scene hadn't really hit yet. It was just about to, but, you know, natural childbirth was huge. And so during the pregnancy, my father had fallen ill, developed cancer, and died, and I started miscarrying at about 5 months. So I was considered a high-risk pregnancy, so I had to have the baby in the hospital. And the birth actually went pretty well, the delivery, not really a lot of complications, even though I was high risk.
So can you give us more information? Because this sounds really interesting, so I'm confused. You, at 5 months, you started spotting?
I started bleeding at 5 months.
And then did they put you on bed rest? Like,
they put me on bed rest, hips above the shoulders. They gave me a pill. Well, first they wanted me to get an abortion. Because the pill, if I ended up having a girl, they said she would not develop at puberty. And so they really encouraged an abortion, which at 5 months is kind of pretty far in. And I didn't want to do that. And so he said, well, you better hope you have a boy. So I didn't. I had a girl. So her whole life we were waiting for her to hit puberty and see what would happen, but she's fine. And so that didn't manifest. There was a point in time where we had to tell her, this might happen to you. So that wasn't very fun. But the pill did stop me from miscarrying. I think it was Provera. And so I carried her to term and went into labor naturally. I wasn't induced. And had her at the hospital.
So when you... I mean, you must have had a really complicated emotions about this, because a lot of times there's this excitement and anticipation. And
well, it was kind of sad time period, so I was grieving while I was pregnant for a while there. My dad really loved kids, and so that was going to be the grandchild he was really looking forward to seeing, and he didn't get to see her. Or any of my kids, for that matter. So that part was hard. You know, I guess time helps you move on. And so I got through it. And I think I was just happy to carry her to term. And then when she was born, she was so healthy. That was happy moment. And I wanted a girl, so I was happy about that, too. And the treatment I got during the birth wasn't great. They weren't really used to anyone not taking drugs at the hospital. They weren't used to natural childbirth. I don't feel like I was treated very humanely as a woman by a lot of male doctors. And it was overall a pretty negative experience during the labor and delivery because of that. And then after that, the baby got sick.
Can you elaborate a little bit more on the treatment or what the standard was at the time?
So, well, that's what it was. The treatment was the standard at the time. You were just expected to put up with these things that were kind of dehumanizing and give them your money to treat you that way. And I think that now they treat women a lot better and with a lot more respect. I would say there was a big lack of respect. It was pretty standard to give women an enema, shave them completely. My water had broken the night, and so we went on into the hospital, and I went into labor on the drive to the hospital. And they needed to see something under the microscope, and the doctor couldn't see it, and so he accused me of it just being urine instead of having my water broke. And, you know, the tone of voice was really derogatory, I would say. You know, well, how do you know you didn't just pee? And it was just rude. And that kind of set the tenor. And it just went from there. I would ask for certain procedures not to be done that I felt were not good for me, not good for the baby. The drugs they gave at the time transferred to the baby. Epidurals really weren't a part of the scene. Just a few of my friends had shots. One of them was paralyzed for 2 years after she had been given an epidural shot. So I didn't want to do that. First child, had no idea what to expect. And I labored for about 12 hours. There was a woman having twins in the next room. She was screaming, "Holy Mother Mary," the entire 12 hours. And she was on drugs. So I don't know how much of the drugs even helped her. But it really didn't help my peace of mind. You know, the monitor, internal, external, all of that. And then they kept coming in to observe me because they thought it was so unusual that I was having a natural childbirth. And they made me stay on my back. Well, I had back labor the whole time. I didn't have stomach labor. That's the worst thing for back labor. And so, yeah, I was thrilled when it was time to push.
So how did you get through it? I mean, what was your process? How did you prepare yourself?
We had gone to breathing classes, Lamaze. And that's what I did. I did the breathing. And then my hubby stayed in there with me the whole time. He really strong hands, thankfully, and he had put them under my back, and he would squeeze when I would tell him it was starting. And that really helped me to deal with it, both the combo of the two. And so I was able to do it. And let's see.
Did they let you go on your side at least?
No, and you know what? I've got a sniffle.
Oh,
sorry. No, I have a Kleenex here.
Don't
I just
worry about that. Here, I'll
grab one. I've got one. I just I don't want to sniff in the. I know better. No sniffing. Thank you.
Sure.
So, let's see.
Were they telling you, like, not to complain, or, like, how, what was the,
yeah, well, it's just highly unusual, so we'd like to observe you. Okay, I really didn't want people, you know, with a gallery setting, you know, it was like surgery theater, and, you know, just watching me, it was weird. They got bored and left.
Were they looking at your vagina?
No, they were just, I was in labor, in a labor room, and they were just watching me breathe, and they got bored and quit observing me, really. There was nothing exciting to watch, and, you know, the baby was doing fine, so that part was okay. After I had her, I started shaking really badly, and the same person, the head nurse that had been observing me, she's like, "Well, how are you doing?" She came back in to observe some more, I guess. And I said, "Well, I'm shaking. I can't quit shaking." And she's like, "Well, you need to stop that. That's psychological. And you're going to get constipation from it." And I thought that was just so weird. I'm like, "Oh, well, let me just stop my body from shaking right now. You know, it's not something I intentionally brought on. So how could I intentionally take it away?" It was that whole respect thing of just, you know, you're somebody that I felt like I was just a part of this treadmill birth process and you were supposed to accept it. When I had her, they take you into the labor room, and I was really surprised to see these big leather straps. And you put your feet in the stirrups, all right, well, that, you know, maybe your foot will slip out or something, but then your arms get strapped in. And they were really probably 8 inches long and really heavy leather with buckles. And I looked at the nurse and I said, "What are these for?" And she's like, "Oh, we have to strap you down," like almost apologetic. And I said, "Why?" And she said, "Well, you know, some women get violent." And I looked at her and I go, "I'm not on drugs. There's no reason. I'm not going to hurt anyone. I just need to have this baby right now." She's like, "I know, I'm sorry." And then she strapped my arms down. And so it was really, just the whole thing was demeaning. It was a rough experience. I asked the doctor not to cut me, and he completely ignored what I said and did it anyway. And we actually had a lawsuit settled out of court. And yeah, that was my great story. But then the baby came out just healthy and beautiful, and you know, you're so happy in that moment. So that part, you know, of course, is great because she's healthy. She was sick and developed a failure to thrive, spent from the time she was 2 to 4 months old in the hospital, 4 weeks in intensive care. And that was really, really awful. And I don't know if it's related to the birth experience or not. There were a couple other babies with the same problem. She did get well and thrive and is doing great today. But it was just, yeah, a lot of weird stuff, a weird birth. And so it kind of soured me to the whole hospital experience. And, you know, the whole point of having natural childbirth was to have control. And I felt like I wasn't given very much control. I wasn't, my wishes weren't respected. And I didn't have any more hospital births after that.
Did she, that's actually a great ending.
So I just,
did she, your daughter, did she nurse? Or how, tell me about the, when you heard the cry and then what the process was after that.
Well, it was my first baby, so I really didn't know how to nurse, or, you know, you read and you try to understand, and not like there was YouTube or anything back then. There was a league, the Leche League, and those women were great, and they would help you, but, I mean, you had to kind of already go through the hospital thing before you could even get to that point. There wasn't, like now, a woman comes and she's an expert and helps you, and there wasn't any of that. So they take the baby pretty quickly away from you back then. So I really didn't get to spend much time with her. I made them bring her to me and put her on my chest because I had read about that. But then they took her and put her in the nursery. We really didn't like that. So my husband burst in the nursery and held her and got yelled at and kicked out. But we still got to hold our baby. So then, I don't know, a couple hours later, you're in a room at that point, and they bring you your baby, and you're on your own. Oh, and then after 9 at night, you go down to the infant nursery to nurse the baby, and there wasn't any privacy. And so I was in there as a rookie with all these women who already knew how to nurse their babies, knew what nightgown to bring, which I had a hospital thing on, and you know, how do you nurse a baby with a gown that ties in the back? And there was just no help. And so it was frustrating. And I kind of got off to a rough start there. And then...
Were the women supportive?
No, they weren't. They were all just kind of... They'd all had 2 or 3 kids, and it was old shoe to them. And they were all sitting around talking with each other. I think they'd been in there maybe a day before me, and I was the new kid, and I was just kind of in there trying to figure it out on my own. And so I went down there a couple times during the night, and I think by morning things were getting a little better, and then they bring you the baby, and it was still a rough first day of just learning how to do all that. And every time the baby nurse, you'd bleed more, and you're walking, you know, back and forth down a hall, you're worrying, and it just, it wasn't nurturing, it wasn't comforting, it wasn't helpful, it was very institutional, very cold, sterile, and it just wasn't a good experience for me, other than I love my daughter. I got a baby out of it.
How many days were you, was the norm to be in the hospital?
3 days. Yeah, couldn't wait to go home.
And your husband was at the birth?
Mm-hmm.
Right, and he was doing a Lamaze breathing with you and
everything. Yeah, and squeezing my back mostly. I mean, at a certain point, it was just me breathing in my own head, I think counting, just to get my mind somewhere else.
It must have been hard for him to see you go through that experience, to be diminished like that.
I think some of the things that happened, he wasn't in the room with me. And then some of them, you know, he was young. I was 20, he was 22, and we didn't know what the process was, and they treat you like you're weird if you question anything. And I think at a certain point, when he burst into the nursery, I think he was just done with their process and their way of doing things. We had just had it at that point. So it was definitely a learning curve.
So you were in the hospital for 3 days, and then they kept her for longer?
No, I took her home for a month, and then I would take her to the pediatrician, and she wasn't gaining weight. So she was almost 8 pounds when she was born, and when I put her in the hospital, she was less than 8 pounds. She was a month old. She was 7-something. But she had grown inches, and she just wasn't doing well. She had diarrhea. She had failure to thrive. She was hungry. She was nursing constantly. Just wasn't getting what she needed, or just, you know, it was going through her. They did do a long, lengthy process, and it was really scary. The diagnostic thing itself was horrific. You know, they'd call you in the middle of the night, well, we think your baby has spinal meningitis. We want to do a spinal tap. Can you give us permission on the phone? And it's, you know, 2 a.m. We're like, well, we'll come down, you know. Well, no, go back to sleep. Things like that, just weird. And, you know, how can you sleep after something like that? And it wasn't that, thankfully. And, you know, while you're there, I was there for 2 months watching other babies get sick, watching children die, watching horrible things happen. Your baby's in a crib next to a baby that's in a terrible place, and that baby's staring at you, you know, like almost asking you for help. It's a horrible thing to watch. And I'm sure there's a lot of nurse turnover rate with those kind of jobs just because it's hard. And so every time they would think it was something, I would freak out because I had just seen a kid die from that. And so I was really glad when it wasn't spinal meningitis, as I had seen some really, really sad stories and all the families' heartbreak. It was really heartbreaking. So what they did is they finally decided to let her intestines rest, and they gave her an IV. She had run out of places, so they had called and they wanted permission to enter the jugular vein, which is a high risk of infection, and I have seen babies get that as well. And so we had given it because they couldn't find a vein, but they decided to wait until morning. But during this time, they had been just using all her veins to just feed her intravenously, no oral food. And the next morning, she took a slight, perhaps, turn for the better. And so they said, well, let's wait. Let's not do the jugular if we don't have to. And then she started getting well. And that took about 3 weeks of just letting her little intestines heal. She had lost the lining to her intestines from all the diarrhea. And she was about 3 months old, 3 to 4 months old. She got better. She came home. I took her back in when she was 6 months old, and she was just this fat, healthy baby that they didn't even recognize. She gained 18 pounds in 1 month once she got over her problem, which we still don't really know exactly what it was. So, in the end, it turned out okay. Everything turned out okay.
Wow, she must have been, when she was having all that diarrhea, it must have been quite painful.
Just screaming and nursing and screaming and, oh, messy. And there was cloth diapers back then. And, you know, the Pampers, or I shouldn't say brand name, edit, the store bought diapers. They didn't have the elastic around the legs. They weren't as effective. A cloth diaper actually was better. But then when it's that kind of a situation, it's just absorbing right into the fiber. And so, actually, some friends got together and bought me a diaper service during that time. And that was great because we were just ripping through them. And, yeah, you know, you go to a restaurant and then this would happen and you had to leave. And it was messy and scary. It was scary because she was sick and she wasn't getting well. And then, all of a sudden you're going for a pediatric checkup and they say, well, we want to put your baby in the hospital today. You're like, today? Yeah, I'll meet you over there. Be there by 5. It's like, worse than I thought. So, a lot of experience right off the bat with the first child that made the other ones seem a lot easier. It just didn't go as harshly.
Yeah, that's you've been through a lot. I mean, that was a lot to go through.
It was, especially after just losing my dad. My mom was grieving. She's a new widow, all that. I was trying to help her. I think, in a way, it was good because it kind of kept her busy helping me. You know, in a sick way. That happens sometimes.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
Really intense, you know, and really eye-opening, you know, talking about a different era of birthing. And you were right at the cusp, right? You know, like that late 60s, 70s, you know.
Yeah, that was mid-70s.
Yeah.
And I think, I'm not sure when the birthing center started, but I think a lot of women had stories like mine or similar that we just all quit using hospitals because we weren't being treated very nicely and they had to do something to get us back in there. The midwives didn't cost near as much. I think, well, that's another birth story, but not too many years after that, my midwife only charged $200. I mean, she went up in time, but back then that's what it cost, and the hospital was thousands still. And so economically, I think some women also chose that, but for me, I wanted control of my own situation. And so, yeah, I moved away from the institutionalized process, and I think there was just this whole wave of people that did it, and then the birthing centers developed as a result of that, as an outlying, and they act like it's this nurturing experience, but if you've ever been in a birth room, it turns into an operating room very rapidly.
I think we can go ahead and get into the second story. Do you need a timestamp or anything? Are you good?
I just need some good water.
Are you comfortable to start talking about that?
So, I'm going to go to my third child.
Mm-hmm. And you can say this is my third child.
I think back because I haven't thought about this one much.
And you have to, again, think back as far as you can with that third birth, you know. You know, were you planning on having a third child? Does anyone plan on having a third child?
Any of them. let's see. No, I didn't plan my third child. I had already had a boy and a girl. I thought, you know, nuclear family, I'm good with that. But then I did get pregnant again about 3 years later. And so we went ahead and had her. Let's see. I used a midwife. She's pretty well known in the Phoenix metropolitan area. I found out about her through my niece who had had a baby with her, and I was in attendance at that birth. I thought she was very respectful and treated women very kindly. At the time, we lived in an outlying area, and we were about a half hour away from any hospitals, and so the midwife wouldn't come to us. She wanted us to come in to Phoenix and be within 5 minutes of a hospital. So for that child, we found a motel room. It was across a small street off from her office. So I happened to go in labor on a day when she was having appointments. And so she would just walk over and check on me in my labor process in between her appointments. And it was right off the I-17. I drive by there, and I just can't help but have these thoughts when I drive by there and see that. It was like a kitchenette, and so we got two units. So I was with my husband in the one, and then my mother took my two older kids next door. So they were at the birth, but they didn't have to just sit there and stare. and she took him swimming and different things while I was laboring. The midwife came over at the end of her day. Maybe by noon she was over there. She had a midwife assistant with her, and they both just kind of hung out at the table and checked me periodically. I was able to walk around. I didn't have to lay on my back, or I could just do whatever was comfortable for me, and that was really great. Let's see. We thought I'd have the baby by noon, so we were all kind of taking wagers on what time the baby would be born at. Things went really well, very smoothly. Except it was, somebody said 10 o'clock. 10 o'clock in the morning, the baby was not there. So, well, for sure, by noon. 11 o'clock came. I had dilated quite a bit, but the baby wasn't there. By noon, the baby wasn't there. So, oh, for sure, 1:30. And the baby still wasn't there. So we started to get concerned. And about 2:30, I think, she realized I'm completely dilated at the shoulder was presenting first. And so she said, you know, you're going to, I think I was at the foot of the bed, and there was a person, my husband and the midwife assistant, were each pushing on one of my feet, or just, you know, helping me to have something to push against. And it just wasn't going to work. And so she said, I need you to stand up on the bed right now. And so, you know, you're going to have this baby standing up. I'm sorry, but we've got to get this baby out now. So I did, but all of a sudden I started shaking really tremendously, very, very strongly. And I don't know why, but my husband had to hold me up. I just could not hold myself up and push. And I felt strong. That was the weird part, is I felt like a very strong person and I could do this, but my body did not want to cooperate. So, and I was drug free. Although it probably was similar to if you were on drugs and not able to control your own body. But that worked. That worked. So I had her completely standing up.
Did they reposition her inside you or do anything? Or
I don't
she just
know what fall? They did. She must have pushed her up a little bit, and all my kids were born sunny side up, so got her to where the head would come first, and then things went pretty good after that. Yeah. So then after she was born, sat on the edge of the bed and delivered the placenta, and the placenta was huge. It was really big, and she had never seen one that big. I was pretty big pregnant, so I can imagine that. And the baby was 8 pounds, 5 ounces in addition. So now we're in a motel, and we need to dispose of these things. So the placenta's in a metal bowl. And so my husband takes it and just throws it in a dumpster outside the back of the motel. And a couple hours go by, and he realizes that it looks like a crime scene. And birth is bloody. It's a very bloody thing. So he goes back and fishes it out and puts it in a bag and then throws it out again. And I said, well, go throw a bunch more trash on top there. Otherwise, we're going to have some sort of weird investigation, and I don't really want that today. I'd like to bond with my baby. And so it was okay. It was just a weird side point.
Did the hotel know that, or the motel know that that's what was happening? Were
no.
you making noises?
I was breathing. There was a newborn crying all night. But because it was a suite and it was larger, I think that helped. My mother brought my two other kids over right as it was time to deliver. So one was 6 and one was 3. And the 6-year-old had seen the 3-year-old born. And so she was kind of laying on the floor with her head kind of held up by her arm. And she's like, could you hurry up, please? I want to go swimming. So it was no big deal to her. And so I think she took him out and then back in again because I had to stand up, and we thought, well, this might be traumatic. So then we brought him back in right after she was born. And that helped the three-year-old get ready for next year when there was another birth. So they knew what to expect.
Is your daughter that you were mentioning, is that the three-year-old? Or
the three-year-old was my son. So oh, my oldest daughter was six, my son was three when I had the third child.
Does it prepare your daughters to see, do you only have one daughter?
I have three daughters.
Were they more prepared for their own birth, for their own labor and delivery problem?
I think she was. I don't know, you have to ask her.
But I would imagine.
She certainly knew what to expect.
Yeah, your whole youth, really, you're kind of preparing for that experience.
And I attended a lot of other women's births. After I had had, you know, all my kids, I had three at home, so then I was the go-to person for a long time for friends that were having babies or women maybe, 10 years younger than me that were having their first child and wanted someone there that also knew what it was like. So had a lot of that. Had a home birth in my bedroom, someone else's.
Do you keep in touch with those women? Are they local?
Mm-hmm.
I'll have to give you some cards.
Yeah.
I'll have to talk with them.
Yeah. One is in California, one is local. Mm-hmm. And she had one at home, yeah. She had a heavy story, so yeah, great. She might be.
Yeah, I'd love to.
Definitely somebody you'd like to talk to.
So I'm going to ask you that really hard question.
Okay.
Reflecting on these birth experiences, and not to think of it as like summarizing them, but just, you know, when you think back on these experiences, somehow we attribute meaning to them, you know, if you can think about what they've meant to you, or if the experiences surprised you, if there's anything surprising about them, or
anything surprising. Well, I guess at that time, you know, everything, you know, was just right at the end of the hippie movement, and so everything was supposed to be natural and go well. A lot of people, the dads were delivering the babies. They didn't even want midwives. People were making placenta stew after the birth and celebrating. We didn't go that far, but we did plant it with a tree over for the ones that we could. Obviously, the motel one, we didn't. So it was surprising when things would go wrong, I think. It was also nice when something did go wrong, but it was able to be handled naturally. So, you know, a simple solution instead of a C-section to stand up and have the baby. You know, the women were just fabulous to work with. They were, you know, a part of my life, a big connection, and I stayed in touch. I called them back when I got pregnant again. You know, they were definitely my go-to people. I think that having moved from a very clinical situation into a situation I chose was more of a personal journey and taking back control, and I think I relate to that. And I'm not sorry. Not one bit sorry I did.
That's good. That was excellent. I love the idea of personal journey, too. I think that was really lovely. Yeah. Yeah, that's great. And,
okay.
And taking ownership of your experience. And, you know, it's interesting